Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome to a new episode of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime with me, your host, the terribly beardy A.P. Fuchs. So here we are, all scruff and gruff and doing an intro. But anyway, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the scruff. If you're just listening to it, imagine like Gandalf on a bad day. So that's where we're at. But yeah, I'm having a good time. Today, the day I'm recording this is a Saturday, so this morning I sent off the final issue for my Year 7 goof that I did with the newsletter, and I apologize to everyone for that again. The good news is, next week we will be getting into Issue 2 of Year 8, so therefore Issue 1 had gone out, a mistake had been caught, and now we're going into Number 2. So the good part is, at least the first issue, the intro issue of every newsletter year is always just that, an intro issue, right? So the good part is, come next newsletter, we get to have, like, getting into year 8 as it's supposed to be, because we're changing format, doing things up. So I invite you to go to canisterx.com or apfuchs.ca and sign up for the newsletter, because, yeah, we're getting down with the new newsletter year. So anyway, I want you guys to stick around till after the credits, because I have a question I'm going to pose that I'm genuinely curious about. And I'll touch on it when I talk about story before the story, but more specifically, I'm going to get into it after the credits. So for right now, let's get into story before the story, because this one, well, it's good for the overthinkers. Let's put it that way. Let's go. All right, folks, so this is story before the story, and this season, as I always reiterate, we're exploring how stories are part of the human experience, how they're part of our everyday lives, and basically how we're doing stories 24/7. So this past week, I released an AuthorTube video, and the AuthorTube video was just to answer a question called, what is purple prose? And I give a quasi-longer answer in the video, plus it's more directed towards writers, because purple prose is something you're supposed to avoid. And then I'm going to give you the short definition for this podcast. So the short you can look up the long one and the really with the boring examples to yourself if you like. But the short definition is basically purple prose is unnecessary words that clog up, you know, a piece of fiction that you're trying to write. It slows the story down, or the information given is not necessary, or it's not important. It doesn't serve the story, stuff like that, right? So it got me thinking. I thought to myself, you know, purple prose. Yeah, you know, like every writer makes that mistake. But then I also think, I wonder if we as people make that mistake, right? Like when we're experiencing something, whether it's in the present or whether we're recalling something from the past, how much superfluous information are we adding to that particular story? How much is coming from the reality of the story that's playing out? And then how much is our brains coming up with this extra stuff to kind of almost decorate it in a way that maybe suits our worldview, perhaps suits our beliefs, perhaps suits our train of thought, even though we could be wrong in our train of thought, things like that, right? And I wonder, you know, because we default to stories all the time under different circumstances, as we've been learning this season, and I just wonder now how much of that stuff is clogged up with purple prose, in our case, purple experience, if you want to call it that. So yeah, it got me thinking, and then it kind of gave me a scary thought too, because I thought, well, if I'm recalling an event, or if I'm telling myself a story about something to work, you know, an issue out or whatever, and I'm adding in purple prose, well, one, that's overthinking, and we all know that overthinking can lead to problems, because if you're overthinking, you're actually slowing down your thinking, and therefore you're not running fluidly, therefore you're not going to come to a proper conclusion. But that's a whole other thing. We could talk, because sometimes overthinking works for people, but generally speaking, it doesn't. It basically produces anxiety and makes everyone upset. But I wonder, like, how much purple prose is surrounding these experiences that we're doing and that we're assigning stories to that doesn't need to be there. And then it got me thinking further, thinking, well, you know, maybe myself and perhaps someone else, you know, listening to this is doing the same thing and leading a more complicated life than they necessarily have to. That are you purposely or subconsciously making things more difficult because of the purple pros in your life. And I don't know, to me that seems to be almost like a call to action, a self-action, you know, to stop and do some reflection time and take a look at that and see if that's the case. Like, are you bogging yourself down with purple pros in your life? Are you bogging your memories down with purple pros that doesn't belong there? Are you bogging your, even your dreams, for crying out loud? Like, is there purple pros in there? If it's possible, you know? So yeah, I mean, this might be a call to action for some of us who need to streamline, you know, especially those of us who have, you know, very active minds and very busy heads, and we're always thinking, analyzing, and all the rest. And yeah, like, anyway, it's a chance to just stop, literally cut the crap out of your life and keep it simple and straightforward. So anyway, that's the story before the story. Is I want to talk a bit about purple pros and how we might be accidentally applying that to the various ways we tell ourselves stories. And if that is the case upon self-reflection, then of course that becomes a self-project. And here's hoping for the best that we cut that junk out so we can live a more simpler life, at least on the inside. Because in that case, if that happens, then we actually live a calmer life, a less stressful life, an easier life, despite our obligations and or tasks not changing. But if you get some of the clutter out of the way, we all know an organized desk is easier to work at, right? Right. Okay. Now, let's get into story time. Oh, yeah. Scenarios. Susie walked the street alone. The hole-in-the-wall restaurant she worked at with the crappy pay was only 8 blocks from her apartment in a neighborhood. It seemed the city forgot about years ago. But what could be expected by a 20-year-old with no job experience who left home in a rich neighborhood because she couldn't get along with her folks? The street lights were dim, barely enough for her to cast her own shadow. She kept to the sidewalk even though the streets were bare at this hour. At 2 a.m., all were indoors. She passed a black mitten on the sidewalk, its wool full of grime and dust. The grime was so thick, it looked like it still had a set of fingers in it. Susie never understood how a single article of clothing could just be laying around. Wouldn't a person notice if a glove fell off their hand? Or, later, if they reach into their pocket to get it only to come up empty? Why leave it? Why not retrace your steps and find the damn thing? Guess people in this area could afford to lose things despite, it seemed, that most could barely afford to keep dinner on the table. No sooner did her curiosity about the mitten fade did she find a shoe on its side 1 pace over to the right. It was old, cracked leather. Its shape looked fancy, something higher end, which was out of place here. She took a closer look and noticed a pale gray bump topped with dark brown partly sticking out of its top. She squatted down and righted the shoe. Her stomach lurched. The gray and brown sticking out its top? It was a foot. Still inside of it. Her first instinct was to bolt and get the hell out of there. Her second was to call 911. As she reached for her phone, she imagined a person violently tripping and falling, snapping the bone above their ankle so badly it shot forth from the skin, nearly severing the foot on its own. Then, in a fit of panic, the person trying to hobble away only to further aid cutting off the foot and losing it altogether. No blood trailed down the sidewalk, so that wasn't the case. Then she thought of Saw, and someone copying the end in some weird suicide attempt, the blood loss alone being enough to do them in. Why out in public, she didn't know, but, again, no blood around the area, just a severed foot stuck in a shoe. The image of a brown truck struck her mind's eye with some crazed psycho behind the wheel and him tossing the shoe out his window as if it was his way of disposing of the chopped up body with bits and pieces of some poor soul scattered throughout the city. Susie thought back to the mitten and the caked on brown grime. Was a hand really still inside of it? She stood, wanting to go look, but her legs wouldn't let her move. If there was a hand in there, she didn't know what she'd do. Probably freak out, perhaps even pass out. That shoe, that foot. Her mind wandered to where she watched as a man pinned someone to the ground and sawed away at the person's foot with a hacksaw. Her mind traveled to a black car pulling up to the sidewalk, two big, mob-like guys coming out and nabbing a person and stuffing them in the trunk, only to slam the trunk down while the person's foot was still hanging out. cutting it off. You have to stop, she thought. Get up, move on, call for help. The shoe, the foot, no blood. A random body part laying in the street. A part of her wanted to remove the foot in morbid curiosity. Another part wanted to, well, throw up. Stop it. She stood, turned from the shoe, and spewed chunks of her fries and gravy dinner onto the sidewalk. When she straightened, she heard footsteps behind her, and in her pukey daze envisioned the shoe hopping toward her. She needed to call 911. Susie put the phone in front of her ear, and then drew it back, realizing she was doing it wrong, and then put the phone in front of her face, and through teary-eyed vision, punched in 911, arms wrapped around her and pulled her backward. She fell to the ground and landed on her ass, then was forced to lie flat by two gloved hands on her shoulders that pushed down from such force, and she dropped the phone. Crimson stains on a rusty knife passed before her eyes. A low voice spoke and penetrated her soul. Time to make a pair. Thank you so much for making the time to stick around to all the way after the credits. I appreciate it because I wanted to touch on something that struck my mind. Because remember last week I was talking in the story before the story statement, I was talking about, you know, like Alzheimer's, dementia, and how people, you know, in that state tend to live past events, right? And that really got me thinking because, like, I know from experience that these events, when you hear someone say with dementia, reliving a past event from like 40 years ago, some of these facts can be validated. Like, you know, say the person they're talking to really did exist. They really lived at such and such an address. They really had such and such a phone number. They really, really, you know, had this type of hair or this tone of voice or like the house description that they're getting into, or if they're, you know, remembering having coffee with someone, they're talking about the cup and they're talking about basically like China from, and by China, I'm referring to like teacup China, you know, from 40 years ago and like stuff like that. So all this stuff could be validated. So that got me thinking, you know, like, I don't know how much is 100% truth when that experience occurs or in how much might be fiction, but at the same time, it still got me thinking, are we basically walking around with a constant recording device going on? Like, meaning like our eyes are like the camera and it's all getting like recorded in our brain. And yes, at night we have our dreams and our brain does the sorting and gets rid of, you know, some of the stuff that's not necessary or whatever. But obviously it retains things, because that's why we remember stuff. So I can't help but wonder, though, when someone is in that mental state, if they're tapping into basically like a film reel from 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, who knows, right? So if that's the case, that means that everything I've experienced in my life, like, that's been basically on camera meaning my eyes, and likewise for you, is somewhere on the reels, on the shelves, somewhere in the back of your head, you know, the movie vault, if you will. And then perhaps maybe the only key to accessing these memories, this memory vault, is through an illness. Maybe that's the key. I mean, it's sad and it's tragic, but I wonder if that's maybe the only way to get in. I don't know. I mean, sure, there's regression therapy and hypnosis and blah, 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 but anyway, it just got me thinking, we're recording our lives, and our lives are a story, so once again, it proves the point that everything is story. Anyway, something to think about this week. What are you recording? All right, we'll see you next week with a new episode. Cheers.